From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine on New York State government and politics. Your host is Dave Gallipoli, with commentary by political scientist Dr. Alan Shartok.
Coming up, New York State's children are heading back to school, but what's the state of the schools? Two reports contain some cause for worry. Pierre Infre is in another confrontation with a fellow gubernatorial candidate, but this time he's the confronted. And a strong warning on what the current Gulf crisis could do to New York's economy. Those stories, Alan Shartok, and much, much more, coming up on this week's Legislative Gazette. New York State schools get a C for educational performance. That from the American Association of Parents and Children, a national parents group. That group released a state-by-state report card based on recent studies by the Federal Department of Education and the Carnegie Foundation. One of those studies found that 9 out of 10 teachers believe that parents do not care about education. Connecticut and Wyoming were the only two states to merit an A from the group. Executive Director Scott Staff says the reports should be a wake-up call, telling parents they play an important role in education. But a top education official is disputing the association's report. Our Paul Rosenthal spoke with Lou Grummet, Executive Director of the New York State School Boards Association.
I believe very much in parental observation of school districts and indeed accountability for school districts. I think that's very important. One of the things you should do when you have accountability is some criteria that makes sense. From what I read about this study, and I haven't had a chance to read the entire study yet, it seems to me that this is made up of clear thin air. I'd like to tell you what I mean by that, Paul. The criteria they use to rate districts, by which they put New York State as a C average in the middle, they use parental apathy. Apparently, their view of parental apathy is whether teachers think parents are supportive enough of teachers. I don't know how they grade that. I don't know what that means. I don't think they do either. And it must be an awfully slow news day outside of the Middle East if this made a big story. The rest of their participation, of their points, are Head Start participation, which New York State has a high one, I believe. Student-teacher ratios, where New York State has one of the lowest in the nation. Per-student spending, where New York State is the highest in the nation, except for Alaska, which uses hydrofoils to get around. Graduation rates, where New York State, outside of New York City, is one of the highest in the nation. And standardized test scores, where New York State, outside of New York City, is one of the highest in the nation. Then they averaged all these to give us a C. They gave Connecticut, the richest state in the union, an A, and I would hope they would do well. And they gave Wyoming an A, and I'm not sure under what criteria. I can't imagine how this group could be given any credibility based on what they put out.
Do you think that, on the whole, there are too many of these studies possibly coming out, which could be misleading at times? We've heard another study which came out today showing the average SAT scores across the nation, and every few months there's another study showing different things about education.
No, I think it's very healthy. I think education basically is a way by which the children of America get prepared for a future. And I think that the beauty of the American public education system is that everyone believes they're an expert and everyone has their views. And I think that's great. I think it's healthy. It's democracy. I think it's also fair, however, for those of us who are professionals in the field to separate those studies that make sense. I think that when the College Board comes out and says that they're worried about College Board scores, I think that's something we ought to pay a lot of attention to, and we ought to find out what the story is. I think when a group of self-styled advocates do a study, and one of their major indices is parental apathy, I think that's ridiculous, and I think they're really looking to make news, and I think you have the right to ask these questions, and I think we have a right to help you separate the wheat from the chaff.
Lou Grummet, Executive Director of the New York State School Boards Association. Meanwhile, the average scores for the Scholastic Aptitude Test are out for states around the country, and New York scores are down once again. Brian Shields reports.
Students from the Empire State now score a combined 882 for the test many colleges use to establish which students get into the schools and which students do not. New Yorkers averaged 890 points last year, so who's to blame for another drop in the test scores? That's the question we put to Bob Rice, the spokesman for New York State United Teachers. Rice says since a higher percentage of New York students take the test, the average score is likely to be lower and that the small drop in the average is not as significant. But Rice says NICET is still very concerned.
I think in addition to the overall decline in the scores, an even more serious trend is that among students who say they are considering going into teaching, the SAT scores are even lower than average. So it doesn't look good for the future. And I think what people need to recognize is several things. One is that we need to do more to attract the top students into teaching, because that's still not happening. And another thing is that it's going to take time in order for the reforms that are taking place in education to really have an effect.
But how long will it take for improvements to be seen in the school systems?
Some experts have said that it's really going to take a whole generation of students. In other words, kids who are just now entering the lower primary grades, when they go through their 12 years of schooling or 13 years, there should be a significant improvement, because a lot of the changes and improvements that are taking place in the schools will have had an effect on these students. But it's very difficult to say the changes that are made now or last year are going to have a significant impact on students who are graduating now.
Rice admits not drawing the best students into the teaching profession will hurt the next generation of students, but he says there are ways in which the best students can be drawn into teaching.
I think that each school district independently is going to have to decide how it can attract better quality teachers, and there are several ways to do that. One, obviously, is salaries, and teachers' salaries continue to be significantly below those in other professions, doctors, lawyers, accountants, business leaders, and so forth. And obviously, one factor that a student looks at in choosing a career is how much money can I make, and if you are a bright young man or woman deciding what field to go into, you probably are going to look twice at a field that has a fairly good starting salary and good prospects of increasing that salary. And if teaching is not among those leaders, then that's not going to attract the best students. But salary is not the whole answer, and working conditions and expectations for the future certainly play a role too. And I think, again, schools need to look and see what they can do in order to improve the working conditions that teachers have, and also to increase the role of teachers in the overall decision-making process in the school.
That's New York State United Teachers spokesman Bob Rice. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Brian Shields.
Since starting his campaign, Republican gubernatorial candidate Pierre Infre has made his positions known in a series of what he calls letters to the citizens of New York. Some of the letters have concerned the death penalty and the environment. The latest was about the economy. Lee Farbman reports.
An economist himself, Infre called the state's economic health the most important issue of the election. Throughout the press conference, Infre painted a gloomy picture of the state's economy and added that the conditions would only get worse if he weren't put into office. To start off the press conference, he read from two recent articles, one of them from the Wall Street Journal.
States with the heaviest tax burdens have been losing population to the states with the lightest. Between 1975 and 1988, New York had the heaviest tax burden in the country, 62.6% above the national average. It will have lost more electoral votes between 1972 and 1992 than any other states. Another one from the New York Post. We feel New York's biggest growth industries are taxes, begging, crime, and welfare in that order, a Mr. Sperando told Carrison. The budget deficits are going to increase in New York, so that will mean more taxes. There will be more crime. The place is run by liberal politicians, and I don't mean that negatively. It's the reality. They won't change, so we're going to move.
Saying the United States is built on small companies and individual initiative, Renfrey added New York State is close to an economic decline because it's hurting the small business people. He said New York State should be a place which would welcome private industry, so taxes should be lowered in 4 years.
And I think we've got to get, if you will, the tax burden off the back of the people. And I'm dead serious about that. Now, I'm going to make you a very blunt statement. If the people of the state of New York make a mistake, a horrible mistake, and put Mr. Cuomo back in office, I will guarantee you In the fiscal year 1992, there will be a $3 billion tax increase and probably an additional $2 billion in borrowing outside the tax increase. More of the same. We're looking at the budget currently, it's in trouble. And the way we look at it, and I'm not looking to find it in trouble. I don't want to pay more taxes next year. So what we're saying is a fundamental part of the concepts that I want to bring to the governorship is, number one, promote free enterprise, turn loose the power of the people, the imagination, the drive. Give them an economic environment in which they can thrive.
Other suggestions Renfrey made for improving the state's economic health included repealing the business tax surcharge, reducing 1991 taxes, making liability laws reasonable so businesses will not have to pay out so many million-dollar settlements, and giving special attention to the state's entrepreneurs. Renfrey then took some time to answer some questions from the press. The issue of debating came up. Renfrey wants to debate Cuomo one-on-one before including conservative Herb London and right-to-lifer Lewis Wien. Cuomo, London, and Wien have already agreed to two debates, and who brought up the issue? It was Wien himself, who had stopped in to hear Renfrey.
By playing these kind of games here, the only people who suffer are the people of the state of New York. Whether Cuomo shows up, if Wisu wants to come in, why don't we just get out there one-on-one, two-on-one, whatever it is, debate our issues, be instructive. I think today this would have been a much more meaningful press conference or meeting of your ideas, because I agree with a lot of things you say, as does Herb London, I'm sure, and I'm sure Mario Cuomo does also on some things. But if we would offer plans, specific ideas, not just pie in the sky wishes that, oh, I'm going to bring taxes down 7%, I'd like to bring taxes down to 2%, but I have people out there, I have a legislature, I have other interests. The idea is that everybody is served if we speak openly with each other before different forums. And the other thing that struck me, Pierre, and I say this very sincerely, you presented a very instructive format today. I was very impressed with your content of your background. What I can't reconcile is why have you debased your campaign into name-calling when you don't have to? You called me an insignificant nothing, Cuomo a coward and a chicken, people on the airwaves who disagree with you, stupid neo-Nazi. Why do you have to do that when you have so much more to offer?
Oh, I'm glad you admit that. Don't get excited.
No, that's for me. I'm very good.
Don't get excited.
That's the point we're asking.
Calm down. Calm down. Don't get excited. Not worth getting excited about. I've laid out my conditions. I stay with it. That's the end of it.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lee Farbman.
The recent convictions of three New York City teenagers in the Central Park jogger case has brought renewed calls for tougher penalties for the state's juvenile criminals. When sentenced next month, the teens could receive from 5 to 10 years. Editorial pages say the possible sentences are too light. We discuss the juvenile offender laws with State Senator Christopher Maga. The Brooklyn Republican is chair of the Senate Crime and Corrections Committee, and he says the laws should be rewritten.
Yes, I think it's time to do that. I think that if they can be tried as adults, they should be sentenced as adults. It's interesting to note that under the existing law, the judge in the case could move the case to family court if he wished, and they could be sentenced as youthful offenders. I'm sure that the judge in this case will not do that, but he does have that option. So why shouldn't a judge also have the option of sentencing a juvenile as an adult where you have a terrible crime such as we did involving the Central Park jogger?
When the current criminal justice laws for juveniles were rewritten in 1978, do you think that there have been changes in such crimes committed by juveniles in the past 12 years that would warrant changes?
Yes, I do. The situation known as wilding, where juveniles maraud and assault and commit rape and so on, would indicate that society is now ready for an additional change in the juvenile laws. If you remember, in 1978, the laws were changed involving murder committed by juveniles because of a fellow named Willie Bosket, who was 13 years of age and I think had killed about 3 or 4 times. So it took a Willie Bosket to get us to change the law as far as murder was concerned, and maybe the situation now involving wilding, we should also change the structure and treat juveniles as adults, not only during a trial, but also as far as sentencing is concerned. But remember, the problem that we have in New York State is called the New York State Assembly. New York State Assembly will not increase penalties. It's very difficult to get them to increase penalties. I'm sure that as a state senator, I could put a bill in tomorrow increasing penalties and treating juveniles and try them as adults and increase penalties, but it'll never see the light of day in the New York State Assembly, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any plans to put anything forward to as calls for such changes in the justice system come about? Do you have a plan to put something forward?
Yeah, I think we'll take a very serious look at it, put together a piece of legislation, and see if we can convince the New York State Assembly to take a look at it and become serious about making some changes in the area of juvenile justice.
Mainly in the penalty area?
Yes, mainly in the penalty area. You know, you've got to remember also, under the existing law, while the maximum sentence for the defendants in a Jaga case is 5 to 10, there is a low, could be 1.5 to 3. I'm sure that the judge would not do that, but if we had a judge who felt that maybe they didn't want to give them the 5 to 10, he could do 1.5 to 3.
State Senator Christopher Mega of Brooklyn. The current deployment of troops in the Persian Gulf is a costly proposition. But while Americans rally around the flag, some are thinking of the economic danger of a war, not just to the U.S., but to New York State as well. Gerald Salenti is director of the Socioeconomic Research Institute of America in the Hudson Valley community of Rhinebeck. He discussed the economic perils of war.
New York State is already in a recession. We have a recession in retail sales. We have a recession in auto sales. We have a recession in real estate. The state is in a recession. A prolonged crisis is only going to deplete money from the treasuries, take money out of the financial system, and in fact make an already bad situation worse. We have to understand that it costs a lot of money to fight wars. So if we're going to put our money in the military, and we're not saying, by the way, whether we should or shouldn't, all we're doing is showing the implications of this kind of conflict, then we could understand that our economies are going to decline even more. You remember that during the past several months, the major news stories have been the S&L crisis, banking crisis, commercial banking as well, the continuing decline, the recessionary decline, tax issues, budget deficits. Well, those stories are off the pages now. But those problems haven't gone away, and in fact, they're becoming worse because they're not being addressed. Therefore, we can expect the financial problems to increase in severity as our human and natural resources are focused on the Gulf crisis.
How would corporate America react to this, especially Manhattan and especially Wall Street?
If the prolonged crisis continues between the United States and Iraq, it's going to have a very negative effect on Wall Street, on Manhattan, on all types of corporate business. You will see from time to time there are going to be rebounds in the stock market as there's more peace talk. Peace brings prosperity, not war. War only depletes economies.
We mentioned the corporations and, of course, the big businessmen. How about the small businesses? Will they also be affected?
Everyone is going to be negatively affected by a prolonged Gulf crisis. And not only business people, it's going to affect everyone across the board. We already have problems with education. We have problems with health care costs. We have problems with drugs and homeless. When you fight a prolonged war, that depletes your treasury. And right now, our treasury is already depleted. Our politicians have put us into a deficit spending spiral over the last 10 years. That forbids us, actually, from borrowing more money to support a war effort. So we really have to address these domestic issues as well. They're not being addressed now. The major focus is primarily on the Gulf crisis. So in the meantime, we have a recessionary attitude, or a recessionary, in fact, developments in the Northeast, in New York, and they're going to get worse if the economic social problems are not addressed. There's going to be long and strong support for our involvement in the Mideast. we don't see it waning at all for the president. You see, as the U.S. declines economically, our military power is proving appealing to those who love to chant, "We're number one." And in our analysis, we find many people saying that they are tired of the U.S. being kicked around. Therefore, while issues such as the S&L crisis, budget deficits, increased taxes, skyrocketing health care costs, and declining education system are difficult for many to solve or comprehend, kicking butt is clear and simple.
Gerald Celente of the Socioeconomic Research Institute, speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Mike Fondacaro. With about 3 months to go until Election Day, our Brian Shields spoke with Fred Dicker of the New York Post to evaluate a gubernatorial campaign which many regard as a foregone conclusion.
I mean, it's like they're giving an election, but nobody's coming. There really are no issues, and to the extent that debates are an issue, I think Pierre Renfrey, the Republican challenger, who's got the most to lose by not having the public focus on the governor's race, has made a major tactical error, because frankly, I think nobody cares about this debate about debates.
I've seen Governor Cuomo on television, but not necessarily an ad for Governor Cuomo. It's an ad for the Environmental Bond Act. Do you think we'll be seeing some actual Cuomo for governor ads later on?
Well, let me just say that you are seeing Cuomo ads, but they're the kind of ads that political consultants have put together. What the governor is doing, and I guess he's doing it skillfully, is putting on ads purportedly in favor of the $1.9 billion bond issue that'll be on the November election. He's paying for them with his campaign committee. So you see the governor, and you see him talking about the environmental bond issue. They don't mention the election, but what's going on here is that there's an effort underway to associate the governor with the bond issue, with the environment, which every political poll these days shows is a popular issue with the public. So at a time when many polls are showing the governor's popularity declining, and in a time when there are a great many issues that have left New Yorkers unhappy in the state, from crime to the declining business community, instead of going on the air and saying, well, you know, this is my record on crime, which wouldn't look very good right now, or this is my record on the economy, which many people think wouldn't look very good now, he's going on the air and saying, look, I love the environment. It is a political ad. It's just a subtle one, which tries to link the governor with a very popular issue, the environment.
Another allegation made against State Controller Ned Regan last week. This time he allegedly took some investment advice from a contributor. That advice didn't work out. The Boston office building, which he invested state pension money in, lost value. Is this really going to hurt Regan, do you think?
I think it's going to hurt him. I think it's also a cheap shot. I think Regan has done nothing that Bob Abrams, Mario Cuomo, and legislators around the state have been doing for years. Regan, though, I think didn't handle it well, and of course he got caught up in a scandal a couple of years ago in which one of his political employees had written a very damaging memo which said that the controller's office, Regan's office, should convince people doing business with the controller's office, because the controller's office gives out a lot of business, that they should give contributions in order to get state business. Now, that was investigated by the New York County Attorney, District Attorney, excuse me, Bob Morgenthau, and it was a finding that nothing wrong had been done. But the impression was created, and understandably so, that Regan was tainted by a desire to extort money from contributors. This story that came out last week was along the same line, but there's no evidence of criminal conduct. In fact, there's no evidence that Regan did anything that, as I said, Mario Cuomo or Bob Abrams hasn't done in the past. On the other hand, since the image has been created and the story got very big play, including a front page story in the New York Times, there's no question that Regan has been damaged, and you can be sure that his Democratic opponent, Carol Bellamy, will be raising the ethics or sleaze issue during her campaign to play on the impression that's been created that Ned Regan is less than 100% honest.
You're tuned to the Legislative Gazette on Public Radio. I'm Dave Gilletly. Joining us now is our political analyst, Dr. Alan Chartok. Alan, this week at the state capitol in Albany, a rally to legalize hemp. Where is this going?
Well, it's going nowhere, in my opinion. We have such an anti-drug ethic being developed in this culture that you don't turn around and send another signal, David, and say it's okay, and we're going to take one drug and we're going to legalize it. Now, I think there are cases in which legalization should occur. For example, I think by medical prescription, if The only thing that can help a terminally ill cancer patient or somebody who's in chemo and the doctors know it and it's been proven in some cases, I think, okay, good. Do it by prescription the same way you would do other substances which you don't want people to take in excess, and give doctors the right to prescribe it. I'm for that, but I am not for sending the wrong kind of signal to the society that we're going to turn around now. I am also not for over-punishment. I'm not for putting anybody in jail for smoking marijuana, unless, of course, they smoked marijuana and drove their car into somebody, in which case you punish them for that particular crime and doing it under the influence. I am for giving them what amounts to a speeding ticket for having done it, if that's the signal that the society wants to take or give.
Are we looking at a 15-year cycle here? Because it seems like the last time that this whole thing went around was back in the mid-70s.
Except that I think that there was more of a tendency to permit that kind of experimentation and not to pay attention to the real subliminal signal that we were giving to the young people in this country. Not when you're staffing up, you're putting police officers in school, paying them good money, having drug experts saying, just say no, having national campaigns. This isn't the time to do that. So if you compare what happened in the 70s with what's happening now, I think basically you have a very different situation.
Legislative Gazette analyst Dr. Alan Chartok. Joining us now with a look at some of the other events taking place in state government this week is Paul Rosenthal with our legislative notebook.
Gubernatorial candidate Pierre Rinfrae says Governor Cuomo may be taking advantage of taxpayers each time he goes campaigning. The Republican asked the State Board of Elections to investigate Cuomo's use of state-funded aircraft and employees for political campaign trips. Rinfrae says Democrat Cuomo is taking taxpayers for a ride by charging the state treasury for trips in which the governor mixed state business with politics. But Cuomo spokesman Gary Fryer says the governor pays for the political portion of his trips out of political accounts. Rinfrae complained about Cuomo's recent appearance in Buffalo, where the governor presented a check to General Mills during the day and attended a Democratic Party fundraiser in the evening. Rinfrae says Cuomo attended both events in the state's Grumman Gulfstream airplane operated by state employees. In his complaint to the Board of Elections, Rinfrae said taxpayers should not be forced to pay for the portion of the trip relating to the political fundraiser. State Board of Elections spokesman David Flanagan says the complaint will be reviewed and they will recommend any possible penalties within the next few weeks. The State Liberal Party and the New Alliance Party are joining forces in opposing nominating petitions filed by controversial activist Jeetu Wiyusi. Wiyusi is the gubernatorial candidate of the Independent Unity Party, who has been called the most virulent anti-Semite in state history by State Liberal Party Vice Chairman Raymond Harding. Liberal Party Executive Director Carl Grillo says Wiyusi only filed 16,700 signatures. 20,000 valid signatures are needed to get on the ballot. Wiyusi's campaign officials say he filed 20,250 signatures. This is Paul Rosenthal.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is produced by WAMC, the program made possible with grants from the Legislative Gazette, the newspaper about state government. Subscription information available by calling 518-473-6482. And Empire Information Services, serving New York and New England with electronic news release distribution. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Gilletly. As New York State's children get ready for their first week back at school, two reports suggest the state's quality of education is continuing to decline. I'm Dave Gilletly. On this week's edition of the Legislative Gazette, we'll look at those reports, as well as Pierre Rinfrae's latest confrontation. Join us each week for the Legislative Gazette.